Welcome back, everyone. You are listening to 90s DVD Rewind. This is episode 8. We watched Falling Down. Interesting film, to say the least. But as always...
10.
Whoa.
10.
Okay.
10.
10, he repeats.
Cut it off right there. It's a 10.
He says it's a 10.
10. It's a top 5 movie of all time.
Whoa. That's aggressive.
Bold.
Let me set the stage
here. Can I ask you a question before you set the stage? Is it higher than Ragnarok? Because you've only said that movie a couple times in the past podcast about how good that was. So I just want to check your levels real quick.
Yes, better than Thor Ragnarok.
Floor is all yours.
Thor Ragnarok does not get into the top 20. As great as it is, it is not.
Floor
a top
is
movie.
All yours.
Well, let me put it this way: it's been 2 weeks since we last convened. And in that 2 week span, I have watched Falling Down 4 times.
Oh my.
4 times. Because it's one of the top 5 movies of all time.
I was going to ask all if right. your cable went out or something, or maybe you just,
nope.
you know, got locked in a room and that was the only thing available for media purposes.
Oh, this is going to be a fun week. I can tell.
Boy. All right. So 90s DVD Rewind episode 8. The movie is Falling Down. You guys have been around with us. You know that the place to check us out is on Anchor. You can head on over to anchor.fm/90rewind. Head on over to the webpage to check us out. We have Twitter and Facebook if you guys want to follow us there. Twitter is @90rewind. That's @90rewind. And Facebook is @90sDVDRewind. That's @90sDVDRewind. Apple Podcast, Breaker, Google Podcast, Overcast, Pocket Cast, Radio Public, Spotify, and Stitcher are also available formats that you guys can use to listen to our podcast as well. Seems like you guys are doing pretty good, but I'm going to ask anyway. Gentlemen, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. I'm excited. You know, Michael coming in, interrupting you. He's obviously got a lot of positive things to say. You know, having talked to Nick over the weekend, we're definitely on the other end.
Crazy. You're crazy.
So I'm looking forward to, I guess, butt heads with you, Michael, and get into Falling Down.
I had a good weekend, if anyone was asking. We had a draft. Our fantasy draft went very, very well. I have 2 running backs on my team that are not with their teams in Ezekiel Elliott and Melvin Gordon. So hopefully they show up and I'm able to kick some butt in the fantasy football season and playoffs if I'm able to make it there. Michael, you said you were doing fantasy football. Have you ever drafted yet?
I am not doing fantasy football this year.
Ooh, okay.
Or like
no fantasy football for Michael.
Probably never again.
Wow. So he's retired.
I don't know. It's like video games. It's of the past.
He is retired. All right. Well, Falling Down. Michael, you know the drill. We've been doing this, you know, 7 times before. This will be the 8th. And I think that there's definitely going to be a lot more enthusiasm and a lot more oomph from you because you started out the show saying it's a 10.
10.
So take it away.
Falling Down. Greatest movie of all time that is not about vengeance for dead people. It does not get better than this movie. We usually start with our best scene. I'm going to tell you the best scene in this movie. The entire hour and 53 minutes is the best scene. It's that good. Came out in 1993. Joel Schumacher's the director. Michael Douglas is your starring role, and nobody else matters. Falling Down is a unbelievably on-point movie for our time. It is anti-political correctness. It is everything that is great about a Hollywood insane movie. 74% on Rotten Tomatoes. I didn't even look at what Roger and Ebert thought because it doesn't matter. This is just one of the best movies of all time. The concept is, and just a reminder, everybody listening, I am going to spoil the movie in about 30 seconds. So if you have not seen it and you desire to see it, go ahead. It's been out for more than 25 years. So if you haven't caught up by now, it's time to start. But the concept of the movie, Michael Douglas is a single individual person sitting in a car in traffic in Southern California. I believe it's set in LA. And the movie opens fading in from black with a close-up on his mouth, on his teeth. It expands to his lips. It pans up to his eyes. You see his glasses, sweat is pouring down the side of his face. He's just sitting in silence in a car. The music slowly starts to come up. You start to hear the sounds of the freeway that is in gridlock traffic. Nobody's moving. You hear kids screaming. You hear radios. You hear sirens. You can hear a helicopter going ahead, going overhead. You start to hear people beeping. You start to hear people talking, brakes squeaking. Fly lands on Mr. Douglas's neck. We'll call him Defense for the purpose of this podcast. He tries to hit it with a newspaper, it being the fly. The tempo of the music is picking up. It sounds very ominous. You could tell this guy is just losing his mind right from this opening scene. It's getting louder. It seems like the whole world is closing in. And suddenly, the door flies open. Everything comes back to normal. All the sounds are normal. Nothing excessive. Defense gets out of the car and starts walking through traffic, and one of the people in the cars behind him yells out, "Hey, where do you think you're going?" And he just turns around and looks at him and says, "I'm going home." And falling down is the movie of Defense going home. So that's our movie, and we're gonna talk about it. We are probably going to divert a little bit from our, well, I was thinking we might divert a little bit from our normal structure, but given that I now have two cousins who have no idea what a good movie is, I think we will go back to that structure for a little while. And our, you know, kind of opening thoughts, we'll start with that. I've already given you mine. It's one of the five best movies of all time. So now I will, I'll turn it over to you guys. And, you know, if our audience has any taste whatsoever, I probably won't talk to them again because they're going to turn it off after they hear what you have to say.
So just a quick little information session about the podcast. If some of you have been keeping up with us since episode one, we used to do This Day in the 90s and the sports interlude. We have removed those due to time, and we are going to strictly focus on the movie in case anybody is wondering why we haven't done that in the past couple podcasts. But I'm also interested to see what Michael White might want to change up in the future. But as for falling down, Michael, you told us at the very end of the last podcast, Sneakers, which I thought was the best movie we had seen, and is still the best movie that we have seen out of all the movies that we have watched. You said that Falling Down is a Michael movie. And when I finished the movie, I said, this is a Michael movie. This is, to a T, no doubt about it, a Michael movie. And anyone that knows you and watches Falling Down, it's, you know, basically PB&J. Like, it just goes together. It just goes together. I thought the movie made absolutely no sense. I was sitting there trying to process everything for a couple days, went back, tried to read some stuff online to try to put some things together, tried to watch a couple scenes again, and I still came away with the movie making absolutely no sense. So many questions, so few answers when it comes to this film. It didn't keep me very interested. There were so many parts to where I thought about playing video games or putting on preseason football or just checking my phone and surfing the web. I really struggled watching this movie more so than I did when I watched Silence of the Lambs, and I gave Silence of the Lambs a 2. So that wasn't very good. There were certain parts that I did get slight interest in, but going back to the power, which is YouTube, and rewatching them again, we're talking about maybe a minute and a half, 2 minutes. And I don't think that's very, very good when it comes to a movie that is almost 2 hours long. So that's kind of what I took away from Falling Down.
I'm still trying to figure out what I've taken away from this movie. I thought Digstown was ridiculous, but after having watched Falling Down, Digstown's a rather sane movie. And this is one of the most, maybe the most ridiculous movie I've ever seen. And, you know, with Digstown, I was entertained. And, you know, same thing with Falling Down, but just with, you know, one event after the other, and it just getting more and more ridiculous. I just didn't think it made for a great film. You know, we'll, you know, I would imagine we're going to talk about Michael Douglas quite a bit during the podcast. He was phenomenal, an extremely dynamic character that's had a lot happen to him. And, you know, there's no reason that any other performer should win best performance, just simply because he absolutely dominates this movie, probably more than anyone else in any movie we've seen. Just a very weird film.
I can't believe you guys. This is ridiculous. Falling Down is a story about one man losing his mind. And, you know, I mean, you guys like the Avengers movies, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
How is this any more ridiculous than those?
When it comes down to the impossible, the unimaginable, and putting that into a universe, there are rules that don't apply when it comes to a movie of realistic possibilities. Michael Douglas does not live in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. He does not live in the DC Universe. So there is no Superman or Iron Man or Thanos or Darkseid. So there aren't ridiculous things that are supposed to happen. This is a normal man in a normal world where normal rules apply, and just crazy, unrealistic things that should never happen are taking place all at once to this man, and we come away with it scratching our heads like, that just doesn't seem physically possible at all. If you're going to...
This doesn't seem physically possible.
This will be my first complaint. If you're going to make a movie about real life, and you're going to set the boundaries of, we are basically going off of real life, there is no additional thing. This isn't like Back to the Future with time travel. This isn't like, you know, 300, you know, or any movie that you can think of to where it's not what has happened in history. You're going to bend the rules a little bit. I'm okay with you stretching out the, you know, imagination, and I'm okay with you going beyond what is possible, you know, what something would be just the mind creating, and that physically cannot happen on this earth. But if you're going to play within the rules of what we see in everyday life, you can't, in my opinion, go off of what this guy did and say that that makes any sense. You can't. That just doesn't make any sense to me, and it shouldn't make any sense to anyone else.
So you can't live in a world where people can make movies, it's either got to be a complete fantasy universe or it has to be actual real life.
No, that's not what I'm saying, because there are parts of, like, a movie that I just mentioned, Back to the Future, to there are realistic things in Back to the Future, but the whole premise behind Back to the Future is time travel. Time travel isn't real, and if it is, it's something that's just a theory. But we know that there are things that they are stretching within that movie. Michael Douglas does not live in a world of fantasy. He lives in a world of reality. And we're going to get into it, and I might just get into it right now, but if a guy who almost got shot up by a bunch of Mexican gangbangers then takes a bag of guns and then just walks into a burger joint and shoots it up, he's not going to be able to get into a private golf club, walk all the way to his house, and then get to a pier before anything happens to him. That's not going to happen. And I don't care what time period you are discussing this in.
This is where
it's not going to happen.
No, this is where you're completely wrong. You know what happened in the early 2000s? People flew a plane into a building. You know why? Because people could do anything they wanted in the 90s.
No,
this could have happened.
No.
O.J. Simpson kills people, allegedly, and drives a Ford Bronco for hours on the freeway, and nobody can pull him over, or nobody wants to pull him over. Nobody can stop him. Those things happen. That's the way the world was in the 90s. It was insane. The world you lived in, especially like LA, was like this. There weren't enough cops on the street. What they were responding to was gangbangers and all that stuff. This is not as far from reality as you guys think. And the world that you grew up in, with all this government oversight and cameras everywhere and everybody listening, there was no such thing as a digital camera in 1993. There weren't hard drives hooked up to cameras recording things in every single store everywhere. That didn't exist. You guys grew up in a post 9/11 world. So I think your frame of reference is completely different. I mean, I could see this movie. No, of course not. Everything put together? No, but that's what Hollywood is. It puts together things that ordinarily could never be put together in the real world. Most movies don't make any sense and would never. Sneakers would never happen in the real world. it would never happen where you have people pretending to be government workers who are in a building that's set to be knocked down in 10 days, but the whole building is bustling and the guy doesn't notice that it's set for demolition. That would never happen in the real world. That's, you have to take creative license with a movie. That's what this movie did. It put together a sequence of events, each one of which could have happened, and puts them together in a way that could not possibly have happened to make it an entertaining watch. And the purpose of that is to show you this guy's descent into madness and how your average everyday goings-on of the world can just beat a man down and break him. That's what happened here. And taking that and saying, oh, well, it's in the real world and this could never happen in the real world. Well, then they might as well not make movies. Because any movie we're going to watch couldn't have, White Men Can't Jump would have never happened in the real world. Wesley Snipes and Woody Harrelson would have never broken up and gotten back together three times over the course of a few weeks. It you know, Woody Harrelson would have gotten his ass kicked all over LA in that movie. So to say that this movie is not good because you can't perceive it as happening in the real world, I mean, you might as well not watch movies.
But it doesn't, Michael, but the movie doesn't make any sense from beginning to end, especially after you finish the film.
In what way?
The guy has been going where? Where has he been going for a month? He's been getting in his car and going where for a month? Where has he been going?
Nowhere.
Nobody knows. He's been going nowhere.
It doesn't matter. It's not relevant to the movie.
But it does matter, because why is it that day that all of a sudden he decides to have a meltdown? Why wasn't it the day after he got fired from work? Why wasn't it the week after? Why wasn't it half a month after?
How does that matter to the movie?
Because it does, because what has this guy been randomly doing for a month?
He's probably...
What has he been randomly doing?
Nicholas, he's crazy. That's the point.
So he could have been crazy a day after he got fired.
Okay.
He could have been crazy 2 days after. Like, it just all of a sudden at once, this guy just decides that for the 29th day in a row after I've been fired, I'm going to pretend like I'm going to work. I'm going to all of a sudden have a meltdown, even though I was fired 30 days ago. And then I'm going to walk around the city basically on the day of my daughter's birthday and do a bunch of crazy stuff that would never happen.
Well, there's your answer.
All at once.
That's what made him flip. It was his daughter's birthday. That made him go crazy. That's the day he decided, I'm going to go see my daughter. I don't care about anything else that happens. I'm sick of the world and I'm going to see my daughter. But that's not even relevant to the movie. He flips. What does it matter if it was this day or 8 days before or 8 days after? Either way, the movie would have been about that day. So how is that relevant?
It just doesn't seem to make any sense to me, Michael. It's just too ridiculous.
So his insanity is not logical enough for you. That's it.
No, it's not his insanity. If the man is insane, he's insane. That what I'm saying is, in terms of how they structured the movie and the backstory that they gave his character,
brilliant,
doesn't add up for me.
Okay.
It does not add up. If he's that crazy,
you're expecting insanity to make sense.
No, I'm not saying it's supposed to make sense.
Why does any person go crazy on one day as opposed to any other? They just lose it one day. Here, the trigger was his daughter's birthday. So actually, it makes sense because there is a trigger. There is a reason for it to be this day and not any other day. Because this is the day that was his daughter's birthday.
So then why didn't he just, instead of just driving to pretend work, why didn't he just drive to the house from the beginning of the day? If the day is the day.
Because
it starts at that day. He got crazy because he sat in the car in traffic, like every other day after he got fired from work, when he sat in the car in traffic.
As they express throughout the movie, his entire world was based on rigidity and rules. So after he's fired from the job, he's going to back and forth to work every day because that's what he's always done. It's the only thing he knows. He can't cope with anything other than continuing his routine. When he goes back and watches the movies about his daughter and his wife when they were younger, all the movies are about him losing it when things don't go the way that he thinks they should. When his daughter doesn't want to sit on the rocking horse or whatever it was, he flips his lid. He can't handle it. When he gets, you know, he wants to record her doing this and she's not reacting the way he wants, he flips it because things aren't going the way he wants. He has this rigidity and this structure, and this is the day it finally breaks him, and he goes crazy.
Justin, do you have any input at all on this?
I mean, like Digstown, I'm not going to knock the movie on how, you know, this can't be a reality. Now, obviously, like all these individual events and, you know, in the 90s could have very well happened. You know, there's no way that more than two or three of these things happen consecutively. But, you know, I don't knock it for that. I think it just comes down to like the ridiculousness of it all. And but even with that said, I thought the movie was very entertaining. You know, each event, you know, each thing Michael Douglas did was, you know, crazier than the last. But I'm definitely.
And it was hysterical.
Yeah, there were some scenes and there were some things he did and there were some interactions he had with other people that were very hysterical. Just as a whole, it just didn't quite do it for me. And I'm not saying it's like it's god awful, just not great to me and not great as some of the other films we've seen.
So, let's do best scene. Nick, what was the 90 seconds that you enjoyed?
When the kid shows up and he goes, "You're looking at the bazooka." He's like, "You're looking at it the wrong way." And he's like, "What?" He's like, "Yeah, you got to pull it out, and then you got to look down here, and then you hit the trigger." He's like, "Just make sure you look before you aim it." And then like he shoots the bazooka into, what was it? The sewer pipe that I guess the construction workers had opened up.
They closed the road, and the guy admits it was for absolutely no reason. It was to justify their inflated budgets. So I am anti everything. I'm abnormal. I don't like society. I don't like the way people act towards each other. I don't like the facades that people bring. I don't like the way governments are run. I don't like the way people justify the way they act in everyday life. This movie was about defense rebelling against that. Everything in there, from the Korean clerk, "You're in my country taking my money. You could at least have the decency to learn my language." The guy won't give him change to use the phone. The gang members, you know, he's out there and he says, okay, you know, after smarting off a little bit, he says, "You know what, guys, I'm sorry. I didn't realize this was your land. I'll leave. I apologize. I'm out of here." But they won't let him go. No, they need a toll in the form of his briefcase. We get to the Whammy Burger. You know, it's 11:32 and they stop serving breakfast at 11 and they won't let him have breakfast, and he just loses it. He just loses his shit at everything, at all these events, which every day all of us deal with. He just decided one day, "I'm not going to deal with them." And they use this movie to show all of these ridiculous things that happen. You know, the old man on the golf course, "Get off my course." And his response is, "You have all of these acres to play your stupid little game." The Army Navy store with, you know, the guy like, "Oh yeah, I'm like you. I'm like you. We're the same." Just because, you know, he's a rebel, the guy thinks he's on his team. The street work, the same thing. What you're out here doing this street work just so you get more money next year to do more unnecessary street work. I mean, these are all real complaints about the world. Now, again, like I said, is it realistic that all of these six things all happen in the same day to the same person as he walks from one place to another? No, of course not. But they're using the movie as a vehicle to show the ridiculousness of our society. That's what I love about it, because I 100% agree our society is completely and absolutely ridiculous. All right, Justin, best scene.
Nick, you suck yet again, because that's my best scene. That's my funniest scene. The bazooka, the young kid teaching Michael Douglas how to use it, and ultimately what happens is the explosion on the construction site. But just to hit on a few more great scenes that, you know, Michael, you've kind of already brought up, you know, early on, you know, at the convenience store with the Korean owner, how Michael Douglas is able to wrestle the bat out of his hands and is kind of walking around the store, bringing up different products, and how, and he's asking the store owner how much they cost. And, you know, the guy knows his stuff, but it's not a good thing he knows his stuff, because after he gives the correct price of an item, Michael Douglas just smashes all those items and just goes on an absolute tear.
I'm rolling back prices to 1965.
Yeah. And then, you know, all this is really over a can of Coke he wants to buy to get change for the payphone. And he finally gets back to the soda, and the Korean owner gives in, and he's like, 50 cents. And he finally gets his change, and that's a hysterical scene. And then, you know, you look at the Whammy Burger scene. You know, he misses breakfast by a few minutes. I believe the 11:30 was the call. If it's like 11:32, talks about how he wants breakfast. You know, pulls out the gun, accidentally shoots it, kind of assures everyone in there. He's like, well, I know one guy tried to walk out. He's like, no, he's like, sit down. And he kind of assures everyone that he's not going to hurt them, and even has conversations with the customers. Ultimately, he's awarded breakfast, but then changes his mind to lunch, which is hysterical.
Yes.
And then just another quick thing that I thought was funny, you know, when Prendergast, you know, cop on his last day, is hearing of all these stories, you know, from different people, whether it was the Korean owner or someone else on the force, you know, it always ended with a logical interaction. Like, even though he went into the store and took a bat to everything, he still paid for the soda. You know, what a normal person would do. And even with the Whammy Burger outbreak, like, he didn't hurt anybody. He didn't kill anybody. He just wanted, you know, some form of food.
Right. Everybody that died in this movie deserved it,
mm-hmm.
including defense.
Yes, absolutely. Just, you know, really, I just wanted to hit on those two scenes because they were quite funny to me.
I love in the Whammy Burger, he says, why am I calling you by your first names? I don't even know who you are. I still call my boss Mister. I've worked for him for 7.5 years. Oh, he says to the guy. And again, this is the societal disconnect comes. He says, have you ever heard the expression, the customer is always right? And Rick, the manager, responds, that's not our policy. You have to order something from the lunch menu. Oh, it's just, it's phenomenal. Everything. Best scene, like I said, whole movie. The whole movie. Minute one to minute, however, what, 113.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, to me, this is just, like I said, I've watched it 4 times in the last 2 weeks. I've seen this movie at least 30 times.
You're going crazy like Michael Douglas.
Oh, I love it. I love it. This is me in a movie. I'm not a crazy person. I would never do that. I would never give up my freedoms to take out my outrage over the ridiculousness of society. I do that through podcasts and cutting commentary on the state of the world, as Nicholas and Justin can attest.
Mm-hmm.
I thought the best scene to me has got to be at the golf course. So Michael Douglas is walking on the golf course, and the scene opens with these two old men in absolutely ridiculous golf outfits. I think one is in blue and yellow and the other guy's in pink and white. And the one guy's like, who's that guy on my golf course? What's he doing? And Michael Douglas is walking up, and the guy yells to him, get off my golf course. And Michael Douglas says, I am. He goes, no, go back the way you came. And then he hits a golf ball at him. He yells four and tries to hit him with a golf ball. And defense pulls a shotgun out of his bag of guns. And he's like, it's not enough. You have all these beautiful acres for your little game. You have to kill me with a golf ball? So he shoots the guy's golf cart. Again, he doesn't hurt these stupid old men, but he shoots the guy's golf cart. It starts riding down and it goes into a pond. And the guy in pink is having a heart attack. And he's yelling for his pills. And Michael Douglas is like, how can I help you? What can I do? And the guy says he needs his pills. He goes, well, where are your pills? He says, in the cart. He goes, well, I guess you're out of luck, aren't you? Your little cart's going to drown. Now, aren't you sorry you didn't let me pass through your golf course? Yeah. And now you're going to die wearing that stupid little hat. How does it feel? That, to me, that's my favorite scene of the movie. It is not the funniest, though. It is very funny, but it is not my funniest scene. My funniest scene is a little interaction between Prendergast and his former partner, who is a young Latino woman. And he's talking about how his wife got older. She's not beautiful anymore. She lost her beauty. He's like, you know, she just got old. And the partner says, well, you got old too. And he goes, no, it's different because she's a woman. The partner says, what's different? I'm a woman. He goes, well, yes, but she was once very beautiful. And the partner is not happy with that comment. But that's the funniest part of the movie to me. That one little exchange is just hysterical. But I love the way Prendergast, over the course of the movie, is putting together these puzzle pieces and figuring out, hey, these are not a bunch of random things. And you see that departmental influence. Different departments in the police don't talk to each other. So, you know, there's a robbery, what they think, what that ends up not being a robbery. Then there's a gang issue. Then there's the drive-by shooting. Then there's the issue in the Whammy Burger. And all of those things would probably be handled by completely different people who don't talk to each other, especially in a big city like LA, and especially in 1993. People didn't have cell phones. They didn't have text messaging. They didn't have databases analyzing their crime statistics up to the minute. So there were probably different people addressing all of these things. And without the one guy, Prendergast, who just happened to overhear bits and pieces, he's the one that put it together of there's one guy doing all this. So at least, you know, in the story, which, like I said, is admittedly not feasible, but at least they add a story reason to it. So I went beyond my funniest. I think, Justin, was that you about to come in with a funny scene, or was that Nick?
I kind of had mentioned the grenade launcher, you know, what he fires,
so that's
the rocket
your best
launcher.
And your funniest?
Yeah, I think it's the best and the funniest. And I you know, I also mentioned those other scenes, the Whammy Burger, you know, the convenience store, the Korean owner. Another great moment.
85 cent. I love that guy.
Another great moment. I hate to cut you off. I know you have great impressions of not only the owner, but Bane. we'll throw together a compilation at the end of the year. But another great moment. It lasts about 10 seconds. So Prendergast shoots Michael Douglas dead at the pier, falls over into the water. And, you know, that's the climax of the movie. And, you know, Prendergast heads back, you know, to, you know, in the ex-wife's house.
The wife's house.
Yeah. And, you know, a lot of people are there, a lot of, you know, cops and a lot of reporters, and they're trying to get a word about, you know, kind of about the situation, you know, learn about, you know, who Michael Douglas, like, you know, what Michael Douglas did over the course of the day. And Prendergast, you know, he kind of walks through a briefing from one of the, I believe it was one of the captains at the department,
yeah,
a guy who had told Prendergast that he didn't like him. On his very last day, he tells him he didn't like him and really went off on him.
He's a coward.
Yeah, that he's a coward. He sits behind his desk. He's scared to go out, which he totally proves that he is the guy piecing all these things together, you know, going after Michael Douglas. And he kind of just tells him to F off. It's very yes. brief, but it's that's one of my favorite moments.
On camera at the press conference.
Yeah, on camera. His last day, he just had this, he just solved this like huge, I don't know, 8-hour, 6-hour case, whatever, you know, however long Michael Douglas was running around. And for him to do that, given what the guy said to him earlier at the station, was just tremendous. And definitely one of my favorite moments from the film.
Nick, you've been quiet for a while.
So my funniest scene, Michael, actually comes back to the burger joint when Michael Douglas's character, Defense, is in there speaking to the two workers. And he's like, why am I calling you by your first names? Like, I don't even know you people. You know, I call my boss Mr. and I've been working, you know, for him for 7 years. And it's just a very interesting scene from the perspective of, one, what, you know, why is that, that you're so friendly with people that you don't even know? But also it's very funny with just the way that he goes about it and the way that he says it and the whole premise behind him just wanting breakfast and then not getting it at the end. That was probably the funniest scene that I thought of. I thought about the convenience store one, but again, when he bought it at, just like he did at with the burger joint, like when he bought it at the end, I was like, that just seemed kind of stupid. There was a scene that I found funny, and I had mentioned it as my best scene, but I find it ironic because Defense gets the bazooka from this neo-Nazi guy. And he learns how to use the bazooka from a black kid who the neo-Nazi guy was probably hoping he'd be able to use against African-Americans, because when he sees him at the convenience store, he's like, oh yeah, you're the guy that shut up the burger. And it was like, and he says, you know, it must have been because of what was going on via African-Americans. And it was just like, well, that's kind of funny that all of this has now turned around and Michael Douglas is at the, I guess it was the middle of the road. I don't even really remember.
Sounds like you need to watch the movie again.
Ooh.
I don't think I really need to, because it wasn't that impressionable. I didn't really care for most of it. It's not a movie that I would sit there and say, you know, if someone said, hey, I'm going to watch this movie, should I watch it? I wouldn't tell them no. But I wouldn't encourage them to do it, you know.
Send those people to the movie
that I've rated the lowest, the movie that I've rated the lowest, Silence of the Lambs. I would say, if you like horror, if you like this kind of genre, like, you'll enjoy the movie. If you're open to it, I think that you won't be sitting there like, say, why did I waste my time? But if, you know, if you're not into those two things, I don't think you want to watch this movie. I didn't think that it was worth your time at all. This movie, I wouldn't say that it's a complete waste of time, but I'm not going to encourage people to watch it.
You send those people to me. I will encourage them and they will thank me. And then we'll be good to go.
I would just suggest a better movie like Sneakers.
Sneakers was a great movie, no doubt. And definitely a broader audience. Let's put it that way.
It got the seal of excellence from 90s DVD Rewind.
It did. So here's, are you guys just too politically correct for this movie? Are you just brought up in a generation that's too worried about what people think? You can't take scenes like those boots are good, but try these. They're great for stomping queers.
It's...
Oh my god, that guy is just phenomenal.
Nick is nuts. Phenomenal. Nick is nuts. That makes two of them.
I just think, Michael, it's just interesting because, and correct me if I'm wrong, but when we were talking about Digstown and we were talking about the ridiculous of Digstown and how it's possible that somebody like Guillaume could own an entire town and do whatever he wants and basically kill one of the boxers, but if you're going to sit there and say that anything was possible pre-9/11, then I don't see how that was definitely not possible in like the 60s or the 70s. Is it more likely for defense to go an entire day and do everything that he did, or what Guillaume got away with in murdering that one brother's boxer? You know, what's more likely?
I think Falling Down is a more realistic movie than Digstown.
I would disagree. I think if someone has that much power and that much control, according to what you're telling me pre-9/11, to where anything was possible and people could do whatever they want, if that was the premise of your argument at the beginning, then why is that not possible? If your whole premise was, well, someone was able to take a plane and fly it into a building, then why isn't one guy able to kill somebody?
He could, but he would not. He might get away with it, but he'd be arrested on the spot. I mean, that you wouldn't have a black guy being lynched in a locker room and then have five more fights go on that night. That would not happen. But I think Falling Down happening in 1993 is more realistic than Digstown happening in 1993. Digstown happening in 1973, probably more realistic than Falling Down happening in 1993. I would say that, but I don't think the way Digstown went down was appropriate to the time it was set in. But I mean, the people didn't care. I mean, if Michael Douglas did that in LA in 1993, they had so many problems. I don't know that people would have even called the cops, other than the whammy burger scene. I just don't know that it would have happened any real different. Now, again, the stringing the five or six different events all together in a single day, I agree, unrealistic. Now, here's what I will tell you. I will 100% agree that one part of this movie is absurdly unrealistic and takes you out of the movie. There is one aspect of this movie that absolutely, where it's like, no, there's no way that would ever happen like that. And that makes this movie unbelievable. And that is Prendergast still being married to his crazy wife.
Absolutely.
There's no way that he would have ever acted like that. And maybe it's, you know, maybe that's just super old fashioned and not ever been something I've been exposed to, where someone at his age at that time would have been like, I'm going to stick with her no matter what and give up my career and give up my pension and move to Arizona to the town where they put the London Bridge back together. And you know, they try and get to it when he's talking to his partner and where he calls his partner back and he's like, I love her. Just to me, it's like, how could you ever love that crazy, insane person? Like, it would have been just as likely for Michael Douglas's wife to have stayed with him as for Prendergast to stay with his wife. That took me out of the movie, where it's like, oh, come on. Seriously? I can get with the guy shooting up the whammy burger. I can get with the drive-by, everybody in the car missing him and then crashing the car and them all dying. I can get with the Korean owner getting beaten up and buying the Coke. I can get with the golf cart scene, but Prendergast staying with his wife? No way. That's too over the top for me. But fortunately, it's a small enough part of the movie that it's still an emphatic 10. You know what kind of 10 this is? This is the kind of 10 where you go like build giant numbers like the Hollywood sign. Like, I want to go out and put a huge 10 on my roof so you can see it from a helicopter. That's the kind of 10 this movie is for me. The guy, the black guy who's not economically viable, who was denied a loan. Brilliant. What a brilliant addition to the movie. You know, he says, so there's this guy and he's out with, like, picketing all by himself with a sign in front of a bank saying they wouldn't give me a loan. Basically, because he's black. That's the implication. But he has this sign that says he's not economically viable. And I think this is before we find out that Michael Douglas lost his job, or it might be right after. And he get the police come and arrest him, put him in the car. The car stops right next to Michael Douglas, I guess at a light or behind another car. And the black guy says to Michael Douglas, he says, "Don't forget me." And Michael Douglas just has this very slight imperceptible nod of like, yeah, I'm doing what I'm doing for you. And I think one of the brilliant parts of this movie, and one of you said something that made me think of it, and then I forgot it. Oh, paying for the Coke.
Mm-hmm.
He paid for the Coke because Michael Douglas doesn't think he's a bad guy. He thinks that what he's doing makes sense because he's snapped. He's lost his mind at this point. But to him, the way he's reacting to the things going on around him makes sense in context. And frankly, they should, if we weren't in such a crazy society, it would be absurd, all of these things that are going on. So that's another aspect of the movie that I love. It's, you know, at the very end, when Prendergast has him on the pier and he's like, all right, now, you know, we're going to go see some nice police officers. And Michael Douglas is like, I'm the bad guy. Yeah. Yeah, you are. That's brilliant. Brilliant. All right. What do we do next? So we got our best performance. Michael Douglas steals the day. Best performance of any movie we've seen, except maybe Anthony Hopkins.
I didn't think maybe there was Anthony a best Hopkins. Performance.
Obviously. Well, you didn't think it was a good movie. We had our best scene. We had our funniest scene. So we're up to, you know, we're going to, it looks like, hey, we're going to keep to close to an hour this week. Is that even possible?
Popsicle, it's possible.
Good for us.
Right. So recap. I'm distressed at hearing your recap and ratings. I'm just distressed.
Do you want me to go?
We'll
first?
Let you go last, so you can leave our listeners with a good taste in their mouth.
God, there are so many good scenes.
Nick, you want to go kill it? You want to kill this movie? You can go.
Yeah, I'm just. Hey, Michael, don't get me wrong. Like your enthusiasm and your passion behind it and your reasoning for the film and what it has to offer and all of these other things, you know, they definitely make the film a little bit more understandable to a point. I think there are now things that I can see why, if you put the logic of the pre 9/11 and all this other stuff together, of what makes this film, having a different perspective going into it, making it more enjoyable, making more sense out of it, I guess, if you want to say that. But, you know, my overall thoughts is that this is a movie that you would probably get, in my opinion, more out of it if it was like a miniseries. If it was just a random mini series of the same guy, just different scenarios happening when he got out of his car. Like, it was one big dream, and the dreams are always different. You know, he gets out of his car one time and all of a sudden he beats up a convenience store stealing a bat from the Korean guy. And then another time he wakes up and he's walking through a golf course and he shoots up the golf cart and the guy dies because the pills are in the golf cart and it, you know, sinks into the little pond that's on the golf course. And then there's another time to where he goes to a phone booth and he almost gets shot up by a bunch of gangbangers. And there's another time where he goes to a burger joint and he wants breakfast and he can't get breakfast because breakfast, like, I think that would have made more enjoyable than having it all be in one big movie with all these ridiculous things happening all at once. The same individual as he trekked through California trying to get back to his estranged wife.
Come on, how great was it when he's using the phone booth and he gets out and the other guy's mad that he took so long to make
he shoots up the phone booth.
His phone call. Yeah. He just shoots the phone booth and goes, I think it's out of order. Oh, that's phenomenal. The annoying guy trying to push you out of the way and make you rush through whatever you're doing because what he has to do is more important. Oh, it's phenomenal.
As I mentioned before, just so many questions, so few answers. I can't stress enough how much this movie did not keep me interested. That's a real big thing when it comes to getting points. If you're not able to sit there with your undivided attention and really,
watch
really
it 4 times.
Yeah, I mean, that just proves why it's a 10 for you, because you sat and you went out of your way. You know, you had to watch it once for the podcast. You know, maybe you watch it again just to get some clarification, but, you know, to watch it 4 times clearly shows your love for the movie, how much you appreciate this masterpiece. I would say that would be your words, not mine. And that just wasn't it for me. I could not watch this movie again, even if I was told to. I don't find it very appealing, certain aspects. And overall, I would say that this movie gets a 4. You know, it's not as bad as Silence of the Lambs. You know, I wouldn't rate it that low due to the fact that it's not a genre that I dislike, but it couldn't keep my interest. I said some things about it that I think were a little bit positive, and that's really where you kind of get to it. It's not 5 worthy, but it's definitely not towards the territory of Silence of the Lambs, to where it's awful, and I would suggest people not to watch it.
Well, I have bad news for you, Nick. We're watching Falling Down for our podcast next week.
I guess we're not doing the podcast next week.
We should do that. We should just do it 2 weeks in a row. We'll come back here, talk about it, then watch it again. Come back and talk about it again. There is, now that I think about it, there is one other part of the movie that took me out of reality. At the end, when Michael Douglas is now at his ex-wife's house and she has fled with the daughter, why on earth would they go to the pier where there is no escape? That makes no sense. So that's 2 things that make no sense. Prendergast staying with his wife and the ex-wife and daughter going to the pier to try and escape him to a position with only one point of egress that he could easily block. Mm-hmm. 2 things that make no sense. But, oh, come on, there's just so many great parts to this movie. So many great scenes. And you know what, Nick? Maybe you're right. Maybe if you take this and you put it in individual chunks, like each chunk is like, oh my God, that's hysterical. I felt like that one day. And then a week later you watch another chunk. Ah, I felt like that one day. Like everything he's feeling in this movie, I felt this way about everything. I get annoyed. I had this trip to Applebee's once. This was hysterical. I was at Applebee's with 13 people.
I've heard this story before.
This is the Applebee's in Tinton Falls. 13 people. Okay, 11 of us were there, 2 of us were on the way. And everybody orders, and there were a couple young ladies there who didn't want to eat at 11 o'clock at night, because apparently eating at 11 o'clock at night is not good for you. So they were just hanging out with us, and you know, we were like, oh, let's go to Applebee's and eat. So everybody came, and there's a couple people not wanting to eat. And I knew the waiter that we had. My friend Anthony went to school with him, so we had him as a waiter at Applebee's. You know, this guy is in his early 30s, has worked at Applebee's for like 10 years at this point. I don't know. So real winner, as you can tell. Everybody orders, and it gets around. And remember, there are 11 of us there at this time. And there's only 10 items ordered. Now, the Tinton Falls Applebee's is apparently where high school kids go to hang out and not buy food. So there was a policy at this Applebee's that said there has to be, in any party of greater than 6, there has to be at least 1 food or drink item being a bar drink, not just a soda, for each person at the table. So this waiter takes our order, walks away, comes back, and he's like, oh, and let me do it in my nerd voice. Excuse me, people, there are 11 of you, and you only ordered 10 items. So you have to order an additional item or you have to leave. So I call the manager. I say, okay, get your manager. We are clearly not the group of high school kids that this policy is aimed at. You know, everybody there, we're all in our mid-30s you know, probably late 20s to mid 30s. Very obviously. So the manager comes over and she looks down and she sees her order. And I said, first of all, you know, we have two more people coming and I know they're both going to get food and I know they're both getting drinks. So A, that puts us at 13 people and 15 items or 14 items. I'm like, B, look around at this table. We are not here. We're not 18-year-old, 17-year-old kids hanging out at Applebee's at 11 o'clock at night on a Saturday to make trouble, cause a problem, anything like that. Third, look around your restaurant. It's empty. So do you want us to pick up and leave and go to Fridays and order our 10, 12, 14 items there? Because I'm happy to. It's right down the street. And the manager looks at the, I think his name was Brian, looks at Brian and she goes, they're fine. Don't worry about it. So it ends up the two guys we were expecting come and they bring a third guy. And they ordered two drinks and one food item. So now we have 14 people and 13 items. And this kid actually comes back. I say kid, he's in his mid-30s, working at Applebee's for 10 years because he's a, you know, successful member of society. This is a guy who I wished defense was there with us that night to put this guy in his place. But he comes back over and he goes, well, now there's 14 of you and only 13 food items. And I said, Brian, please go get your manager and see if she has a problem with this. And he never came back to the table. That's the kind of thing that defense is out to stop. The completely ridiculous people who are so set on, you know, this is the way it's supposed to be and this is what has to happen. It's ridiculous. And we need more people like defense out there making a difference for the common man. Justin, rating.
One more thing before I give my rating. You should have bought one more item and told them to shove it. But anyway.
Now, what we should have done is ordered 10 more items and then left.
Oh, yeah. You could have just left.
This Applebee's is illustrious. There was actually, this was when we were in college. So this would have been maybe right after college, 03, 04, that time. And me, Anthony, Joey, Omar,
and Kev,
Bartel. No, Kevin didn't really hang out with us then. He didn't come out to eat with us. It would have been Bartel, Chris, De Niro, probably. We went to Applebee's quite often, probably three nights a week on average, maybe more. And there was one waitress there who was awesome. And we always asked for her. She always helped us. We loved her, thought she was great. She was the best waitress we ever had at Applebee's. And we had been going since probably whenever Joey got his driver's license, 1996. Probably was when we started our going to Applebee's two to three times a week for years. But she would never give us free drinks like soda. You know, everyone else there knew us. And whenever we went, we never paid for soda. You know, we'd order our half price appetizers after 10 PM because we always went after 10 o'clock at night and we'd order sodas and they'd give us the sodas for free. And we'd leave a huge tip. You know, there were times we'd have like a $12 bill and leave a $20 tip. It was pretty regular. So this one girl, we left her huge tips. Like we'd leave her $30 tips on a $10 bill. We're all me, Anthony, Joey, we're all very gracious and
that pharmacy money.
What's the word? Yeah. We're very, very, very gracious and thoughtful tippers. And I still am to this day. I tip very well. So this one girl never gave us free drinks for like months, but we still went to her table and we still left her huge tips because we loved her. We thought she was great. One day, we get our bill, and she didn't charge us for the sodas. And Joey, who you guys know, goes, awesome, she didn't charge us for the drinks. And the manager was sitting at the next table doing the books.
Oh.
So the next time we go in, this waitress is now a hostess. And as you can imagine, hostesses do not get nearly the same tips. You know, they get tipped out by the waiters and waitresses, but they don't make anywhere near as much money. And then the second time we go back, she's gone. She quit because she couldn't make money there anymore because Joey ruined her entire career. And then, like, maybe 2 months later, for the first and last time ever, we went to Red Lobster on 35.
Mm-hmm.
I always forget which. Yeah, 35. I always forget which one's which, especially now that I don't live there. We go to Red Lobster and we see her there and she saw us and would not even come to our side of the room. Like, we wanted to apologize and be like, listen, we didn't mean to do that. And Joey has a big mouth, but we're really sorry. But she would not come anywhere near us. And we never went to Red Lobster again. Not because we didn't want to bother her, but because it's terrible. So Applebee's was a fun place for us. It was a good time. They used to have an appetizer called Pizza Sticks. And it was like five little, almost like little matzo crackers that maybe 6 inches long and an inch wide. Like, they looked like fingers. With some sauce and cheese on them. And then it came with this awesome marinara sauce to dip them in. They were $4. And then after 10 p.m., they were half price, so they were $2. So Applebee's is trying to bring people in to sit at their bar and drink, and they have a bunch of 17-year-olds coming in, ordering, you know, we'd get some nights four orders of pizza sticks for $8, and we'd have an $8 bill. And then the waiters and waitresses would give us free soda. So our bill was legitimately $8. And then we'd leave a $20 tip. So that's the Tinton Falls Applebee's story. It's still there. It's terrible. It sucks. Everything about it is horrendous now. But 20 years ago, it was the greatest. All right, Justin. Rating all right. Time.
My rating for falling down has gone up since we've started talking, and
wow,
that sounds like someone has altered your opinion.
No, Nick, that's not the case at all. You know me, I'm authentic, and I don't let anybody influence me. You know, with
you've
previous
had,
movies,
simply had time to reflect.
Yes, reflect. I saw Silence of the Lambs on a Friday. We didn't record that podcast till the next Thursday. That's 6 days I got to digest that movie fully and be freaked out about it night after night. And it really stuck with me. Whereas I watched Falling Down Saturday morning in hopes of recording Saturday afternoon and realized I didn't have any of my stuff. Silly me. That's why we're here now, Monday night doing this. But just talking about this movie with you guys, about how dominant Michael Douglas was in his performance, and, you know, the plethora of scenes that are just quite hysterical between the convenience store outburst, the whammy burger incident, the rocket launcher scene.
Guy busts up my store. He crazy.
You know, Prendergast, this guy who's, to everyone else, has seemed like he's lost it and are kind of relieved this is his last day. You know, him piecing things together throughout the film. What he does at the end while the captain's briefing members of the media. There are a lot of great parts to this movie. Initially, I was thinking a 4. I was with Nick. But I'm going to go up to a 6.
Wow.
Not
so you lie.
Amazing. I guess I did lie, but you know, things
you said
change.
That our scores combined wouldn't be able to get the Michaels, and technically 4 plus 6
equals 10. He actually said he didn't think.
Yes,
He didn't.
Well, clearly, he didn't think
comment. It was definitely something I would not have bet on that. Just a thought. Like this was not an amazing.
Nick,
I'm sorry,
Nick. You said a five, right, Nick?
Four.
Four. I thought I heard five.
We'll let Michael rate it an 11, and I can be right. But not an amazing movie for me, but it definitely wasn't a bad one. You know, him going against the grain of society is extremely entertaining, and this is definitely a movie I'm going to watch again. You know, but overall, you know, factoring in just how ridiculous things were, you know, it wasn't a Sneakers for me. It wasn't a Silence of the Lambs. It wasn't a White Man Can't Jump. But that doesn't mean that this movie wasn't good. Michael Douglas's performance alone, I feel like is must see, whether you think it's completely outlandish or not. So yeah, I'm gonna go Falling Down 6.
All right. Well, I think I've made it clear for me. It's a 10. It's a 10 across the board. Giant 10 on the roof for helicopters to see. The only movies above this, emphatically, are Tombstone, Boondock Saints, and La Pacte de Loup, which are the same movie three times in two different languages with one accent. This is the first movie not vengeance-oriented. Now, there might be another movie out there I like better than this, but I couldn't tell you right now what it is. That's why I say top five. It's definitely not top three. It's number four or number five. I just don't know which one that other one is. So this also illustrates my point. Like, Silence of the Lambs gets a 10, but it's probably not in my top 20 favorite movies. I acknowledge it's a 10. It's a masterpiece. But it's not a movie I go back and watch over and over again. It's not a movie that I would have watched four times in the 2 weeks before we do a podcast on it. So that's where we are. Justin, I think you should make some time to watch these movies a little bit earlier in the process, so you're not watching them, you know, 2.5 hours before we intend on starting the podcast.
There's nothing like finishing a movie and messaging you, I'm ready. There's nothing like it. It's just the thrill of it.
So with that said, we've got a 20 across the board. That is the single lowest rated movie that we've done on a combined basis. Previously, it was 22 for Silence of the Lambs.
Nick,
which I also gave a 10 to. Yeah, because Nick has no taste in movies. We had next was with a 23 was Digstown, which is unbelievable. Justin, you're to blame for that one at 6.
I apologize.
That's okay. You don't have to, don't apologize for speaking your mind.
Oh, okay.
Just say, here's what
I'm sorry that I was sorry
say,
for
I'm
speaking
sorry.
My mind.
No, don't be sorry. Here's what I tell people. Anybody that says I'm sorry, 99% of the wrong, they are not sorry. What they're saying is, that's unfortunate. You know, that's unfortunate. Like if you guys are like, Mike, I hated this movie. I can't believe you made me watch it. I'm not sorry I made you watch it. It's unfortunate that you didn't like it. So I think that is more appropriate. Anytime you're about to say I'm sorry, think about it and think, are you sorry? To me, the prerequisite for being sorry for something is you have to do something on purpose, because if you didn't do it on purpose, you can't be sorry for it. And there has to have been an unforeseen consequence, which you probably should have foreseen. So what you're saying is, I did this, I did not realize the impact it was going to have, but if I had taken the time to think about it, I would have realized that. And I am sorry that I did not take the time to think this through to understand the impact it would have on you. Other than that, nobody's sorry for anything. If I do something on purpose and it has a negative effect on another person, I still did it on purpose. And I knew that negative effect was going to happen, but I thought the positive effect to me outweighed the negative effect to you. Ergo, I am not sorry. I would do it again. If you would do it again, you're not sorry. If you didn't mean it, you can't be sorry for something you didn't mean to do. So that's my view.
That was deep.
I have developed my philosophies over a lifetime of thinking. While other people are playing on their phones and listening to their iPods, I'm just thinking.
Well, wait a minute. Don't say that, because we need them to be listening to their iPods, because that's how the podcast gets plays.
That's okay, because I am replacing their thinking for them. I bring fun Applebee's stories and the philosophy of I'm sorry. So now they can be like, oh, wow, you know what that person's going to do? When they're done with our podcast, they're going to sit and think about it for 5 or 10 minutes. Say, you know what? He's right. I'm going to go back and tell all the people I know that I'm not the least bit sorry for all these things.
Yeah. And instead of saying sorry, maybe you'll say, f*** you.
Well, that's just rude. And now you need to bleep that out.
It's okay.
All right. So falling down, lowest rated movie of our tenure, despite the fact that I gave it a 10, fully half of its score.
You've given out three 10s, Michael.
Yes. Well, guess what? I'm the curator of this podcast. Of course I'm going to watch movies that I give 10s to. That does not mean I'm liberal with 10s. It simply means that we're watching the movies that I love from the time I grew up in when I was most impressionable.
I've given out two 9.5s, and they're sandwiched in between a 2 and a 4.
Yeah, well, apparently for 2 weeks you had taste. No, only one of them. One was Hercules. So next week.
I'm looking forward to this.
First let me set the table. So historically, we had made the decision we're going to record on Mondays, maybe Tuesdays once in a while, and release on Thursdays. That was when Nick was a bum and did not have other things to do with his life, which he now does.
Harsh.
So
say you're sorry.
So we had made a... you're not sorry.
I'm
not fine.
Saying I'm sorry. I'll bleep that out too.
You got to bleep that out too. Lots of bleeps on this episode. So now Nicholas has things to do with his life and he is a little more tied up for time. We have had some audio issues that Nicholas, as the resident audio engineer, has had to fix with no help from us. Without Nicholas, this podcast doesn't exist because I wouldn't know how to put it together. The only podcast I could do is I would hit record, talk for a long time, and then hit stop. Not many people would listen to that podcast. I just tell the Applebee's story over and over again.
It's a good story.
So what we had decided a couple weeks ago was, all right, let's push this. And instead of taping Monday and releasing Thursday, we'll tape Monday and release Monday. So every Monday we'll have something released. That way, if things come up in Nicholas's life where he can't get to it as quickly as he'd like to, we have the whole weekend to go through. He can make up some time. We got some time Monday, and then we could get a release on Monday, you know, maybe after we do our recording. That then didn't really work out either. We had a really bad audio on Sneakers, needed a lot of work, a lot of cleanup. So that took a little time. I think we released that Thursday. Is that right, Nick?
I believe so. Yeah.
Okay. So what we're going to try and get back on track here for is to record on Monday. And then release on the following Monday. We're going to try and stick to that schedule. We are taping right now on the 26th of August. We did not tape on or around the 19th due to, you know, now that Nicholas has other things to do with his life. Justin had some silly thing that he had to do on Monday night. Nicholas was not available the rest of the week. So due to scheduling issues, we could not record until Saturday. Then unfortunately on Saturday, we had more scheduling conflict where Justin forgot to schedule his microphone to be in his car. So did not have, not have the ability to record from where he was. It was just, you know, hopefully all of the things that could go wrong did go wrong this past week. And now we'll be back on track. We should have an episode out to you every Monday on a going forward basis. We are probably going to be hitting some movies that more people have seen, which is good, which means you don't have to go back and watch the movie before we record. And now we'll be releasing on Mondays, which gives you, you know, on Monday, when I say what we're going to watch next week, now you've got through the weekend to watch the next movie before we release something the following Monday. With all of that said, go like us on What do you do? What do you do on Twitter? You follow someone on Twitter?
Somebody follow us on Twitter. Yep.
And you follow us on Twitter at 90 Rewind, 90REWIND. Don't go to Facebook. I don't keep that up because it's Facebook and it's stupid. Subscribe on your favorite podcast generating website thing.
That's right.
We've got iTunes, Stitcher, our best friends Anchor, all the other silly stuff that go along with that. But next week, we are going to watch a movie that, frankly, people that knew me were surprised this was on my list. Three Kings, a story about, I believe they're Marines. They're either Marines or Army guys in Desert Storm who find some of Saddam's gold. Saddam being Saddam Hussein, for you young people. He was a tyrant, an autocrat who was the leader of Iraq during the Gulf War, the Desert Storm. So in this story, these three guys find his gold and have to try and figure out a way to get the gold back to America without getting caught, without getting arrested, blah, blah, blah. Those three guys are George Clooney in one of his first major film roles after breaking out as a performer on the TV show ER, which stands for Emergency Room. It was one of the first doctor shows that led to lots of terrible, awful shows after that. Also led to House, which was a great show on Fox. But other than House, ER has a very long, checkered list of protégés of awful freaking shows. So George Clooney, we've got Ice Cube.
Yeah.
Who I love, who is a phenomenal actor. I don't know why he doesn't do it more. And Mark Wahlberg, who is one of my two least favorite actors of all time. And shares with my other least favorite actor, being Ed Norton, the distinction of being an actor that I cannot stand, but who's in a lot of movies that I really, really like.
Now, what does that say, Michael?
It says that these guys can only play one character well. And the movies in which they're cast in that role are good. For Ed Norton, it's Fight Club. It's American History X is an aberration. Rounders, Ed Norton was phenomenal in. The Italian Job, Ed Norton was phenomenal.
Oh, that's a really good movie.
I love The Italian. Now, The Italian Job has Ed Norton and Mark Wahlberg.
Ooh.
My two least favorite actors.
You just need Will Smith in there, and then you have a trio.
Yeah, I don't dislike Will Smith. I just don't feel he's particularly good. I don't really feel anything towards him either way. I avoid his movies. You know, I think he was great on Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, and he should have stuck with that as his career.
He's good at Men in Black.
But in The Italian Job, so the character that Ed Norton plays in The Italian Job, a whiny, snivelly, rotten piece of crap, is the only role that Ed Norton is good at. And Mark Wahlberg's character, which is basically playing Mark Wahlberg, who's a tough guy,
Marky
annoying dork. Yeah, that. In this movie, Mark Wahlberg plays that great, annoying character that he plays so well.
Doesn't like when you call him that, though, Marky Mark.
I don't know. Whatever. he called himself that. He can't complain when other people call him that. So next week we'll watch Three Kings. Have you guys watched it yet by chance? Probably Justin, I know you haven't.
No.
We'll watch it.
I'm going to finish it up in the middle of the podcast when we record.
Right, yeah. As I'm doing the intro, you'll be finishing it up. So that is next week. That's where we'll be. I don't think there's a whole lot more. Any closing thoughts from you guys on Falling Down, the fourth or fifth greatest movie of all time?
I just cannot believe that a movie like Thor Ragnarok, you did not rate higher after having it be brought up in three different podcasts, Michael.
I love Thor Ragnarok. It'll get to a 10 someday. It's not there yet.
It's not at least 10?
It's got at least 10 or 15 more viewings. It's definitely my favorite Marvel movie. It's definitely a 9, maybe a 9.5. It will be a 10 eventually.
I could have swore I thought you said it was a 10, but maybe I'm wrong.
So Go.
Did you see your boy? Oh, what's his name? He's in Jurassic Park, and he's in Jeff Goldblum. When he he talks about Spider-Man.
Spider-Man.
And
yes.
And he just is like, "What? No, I just like such a great reaction."
We'll work it out.
But
that was a very Jeff Goldblum moment.
But for a second, I was like, "That's just great." But oh man, I'm gonna be so upset if they can't get Spider-Man back. Sony is so stubborn.
My life will go on. Sony is stubborn.
Sony is stubborn.
No.
Sony is stubborn.
Here's Sony's position. The reports are Marvel wants 50% of the gross proceeds of any movie with Spider-Man, if they're involved. On the prior deal, they got 5%. So, Spider-Man, Far From Home, did $1 billion. And of that $1 billion, Marvel got $50 million. For really, you know, having, what's his name, Kevin Feige.
Yeah, he's really great.
Kevin Feige, that's his name? Feige, really?
Pretty sure that's how you pronounce it.
Or I've never heard anybody say
it's one of the, it's one of the two ways.
So, you know, basically he's doing an executive producer role. He's guiding them on the creative and stuff like that. And they got paid $50 million. Now they want $500 million instead of $50 million. Whereas Sony is saying, oh, hey, you know what we did? We did Venom with Tom Hardy.
Which
and that
crap.
Made $1 billion too. Venom with Tom Hardy
was crap.
The movie was not good. Tom Hardy was unbelievable. It was one of those movies that would be to me like a Hercules. Like, take it or leave it. I wouldn't have, you know, I only watched it because Tom Hardy was in it, and Tom Hardy is probably my favorite actor right now. I would not have watched it without Tom Hardy. I don't like the character Venom in general after his first year in the comics. But, it, you know, it is what it is. It's Tom Hardy. I'll give Tom Hardy a chance on anything. I really enjoyed his performance. I am very intrigued by Woody Harrelson playing Carnage.
That's going to be interesting.
That's going to be, I have no faith in Sony to make it a good movie.
And that's the position Disney's probably coming to the table. You're like, look,
we
know you own the character. We don't want to take the character away from you. We just want you to understand that because of who we are and what we do, you can't be successful without us. And I don't have a problem if they say that to their faces because it's true.
It's not true.
It is true. They can't make a good Spider-Man movie without Disney.
Yes, but it'll still do $1 billion.
It
can be
a
bad Spider-Man movie.
I don't
know. It can be Venom. Venom made $1 billion.
Have you seen Into the Spider-Verse?
Yes, I loved it.
Okay, and that's not even anywhere close to $1 billion.
Well, no, because it's an animated movie.
But it's a Spider-Man movie.
We're going to do that. Doesn't matter. It's an animated. People aren't going to go see animated movies. People are going to go see Tom Holland as Spider-Man, whether Marvel's involved or not. Those movies are going to make hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars. So from Sony's perspective, here's what you have. We can make $1 billion and give Marvel half of it. And we're paying all the costs. So we're making $200 million.
But you might make even
million.
More.
Or they cannot have Marvel. They can do $700 million and they make $500 million. So the movie could do $300,000 worse and they make $300,000 more. That's why they're not going to do it. Marvel's being completely unreasonable. But like Jeff Goldblum said, I think they'll work it out. I don't think it's going to be that big a deal.
I hope so. The character will die after the next movie. Then they'll reboot it again.
The entire Marvel universe is going to be in a huge downward spiral over the next 3 to 5 years. It's going to be a disaster.
I don't know.
It's going to happen.
Unfortunately, so, I'm banking off Guardian of the Galaxy to save it, and I didn't think those two movies were good.
I am just disagreeing with you. In America, we have the freedom of speech, the right to disagree. That's a quote from Falling Down.
That's a fact. Everybody.
A great quote. That's him with the neo-Nazi. We're the same, me and you. We are not the same. I'm an American. You're a sick.
I have to bleep that too.
Justin, are you gone? I haven't heard you in a while. Are you watching the next movie? No,
I'm finishing up Falling Down. Yeah, hold on.
Oh,
he just got out of the car. He just told him he's going home in the part Justin's watching.
So many good quotes. So many good quotes. They're interesting part of Falling Down. There, John Deal is in it. John Deal played Assistant Chief Gilroy on The Shield. And this predated The Shield by 6 or 7 years.
That's something I have to watch, The Shield.
Oh my God, you have to watch. That's the best show of all, second best show of all time behind Cheers. Cheers is the best show of all time. If you guys have not watched Cheers, start watching it on Netflix right now. 22 minutes an episode. Just watch it. It's the greatest thing ever. The first episode is phenomenal. The second episode is phenomenal. It only gets better.
I'm disappointed that one of the shows that I like is ending soon. Arrow. Coming to an end.
Arrow is freaking terrible. First season was really good. The second season was a little all over the place. The third season was just a complete train wreck. And I have not watched any since.
I've made it all the way up until season 7. Getting ready for season 8. We're going to get, Infinite Crisis on multiple universes, whatever. The multiverse is crashing upon itself. And the likelihood that Oliver Queen as the Green Arrow, Barry Allen as the Flash, and Kara Zor-El as Supergirl all survive are slim to none, especially when in the comics Kara Zor-El and Barry Allen are killed trying to save the multiverse as Barry runs at this, I don't know how fast he runs, but he runs fast enough in some type of particle cannon to save a bunch of people, and he ends up killing himself, and then Kara Zor-El does something else to save Superman, I believe, and she ends up killing herself. And of course, those are the two characters that they portrayed in Flash and Supergirl, but I will say it's been very entertaining. I've enjoyed all of the shows. Haven't gotten around to Black Lightning yet, and I need to watch Constantine, and then Batwoman is coming out soon. So that should be interesting.
In the interest of full disclosure, since you started talking, I've started watching Roger Federer play tennis.
That's fine. I wanted to mention that. To watch tennis.
Get the tennis in U.S. Open.
Sports interlude. Somebody at work today, but for the people that are listening, it won't technically be today, but somebody at work said, in a conversation, I was like, ready for college football? He's like, no, there's tennis to watch. And I'm like, no, football's better.
College football is awful. How do you care about college football growing up in New Jersey?
Because I like football.
All right, that wraps us up. Nick likes football. He doesn't like good movies.
Can't say that. I gave a 9.5 to Sneakers.
We will be back next week with Three Kings.
Listen to us on Anchor, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Breaker, Google Podcasts, Overcast, Pocket Cast, Radio Public, and Stitcher. Michael said, don't go to Facebook, so you can find us on Twitter at 90Rewind. That's at 90Rewind. Justin, any final thoughts before we sign off?
Nick, go watch some tennis.
All right, that's going to do it for episode 8 of 90s DVD Rewind. We'll see you guys next time.
That was fun.